Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 11th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is John Abore. John is a husband and a father of three, a student completing his master's degree in public health, and an employee of the Portland Public Schools working as a translator and cultural broker for the Acholi community through the Multicultural, Multilingual Center of the Portland Public Schools. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, John.
Thank you. Right here.
Would you like to take the first moment here to say hello to your family? I know your children were excited about you being on the air.
Yes. First of all, I would like to thank my family, especially Robinson and Marina, and my wife, Lillian and John. I thank you very much. Happy Mother's Day. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Happy Mother's Day. For me, too. Thanks for letting me borrow him today.
You're welcome.
So, what do you wish all Americans knew about South Sudan?
Actually, there's a lot that people in the United States have to know about Southern Sudan. Southern Sudan is still a new country, and has just achieved independence in 2011. And there's a lot, especially the situation, the infrastructures are not very good.
Yes.
Which people need to pay more attention, especially the government. They're doing what they can, but it's still not enough.
So South Sudan gained independence from what was the largest country in Africa. It was Sudan as a whole, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And 2011 was a big year.
Yes, all of us, we enjoyed that day. That was a very beautiful day for all of us. Both people in diasporas and people back home.
The whole diaspora was celebrated.
Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about why South Sudan pulled away from what was once just Sudan?
Actually, Southern Sudan became independent from Sudan because of the war that took, that lasted for almost 20 years. Sudan, let me say Sudan in general, was being colonized by Angola, Ethiopia, that during colonial rule. And then
they were colonized by?
By Ethiopian.
Utopian?
During the colonial administration. Because they were being colonized, Ethiopian being colonized by British, then British came into Southern Sudan under administration of Ethiopian. They called Angola Egyptian. Southern Sudan. So during that time, Sudan break out from Egypt, then they became independent in 1956. Then the Southern Sudan was within, it was an autonomous countries, but it was not being recognized to get their independent.
Oh, so it was autonomous beforehand.
Yes, beforehand. Uh-huh. But they joined the North and became one independent country. So for a very long period of time, because in the North, there's a difference between North and the South. Most of people in the North are, especially the religious situation, people in the North are Muslim and people in the South are Christian. So it's really very hard for them to collaborate together. So what break them out because of religion and the Muslim dominant wanted to dominate all the Southern Sudan, all the Sudan. But the people in the South do not believe in Islam. So that made them to break away.
And they were the minority, too,
they
right?
Were the
about
minority.
20% were, yes, the Christians in the South, and
right,
80%
yeah,
were the Muslims in the North.
Right, that's
mm-hmm,
true.
So
yeah,
they've broken away, and now they're building their
their own country. And in their country, they also promote both religions, Muslim, Christian, any kind of religion that goes in the country, they also promote it.
In South Sudan, there's religious tolerance.
Sudan. Yes.
Oh, that's
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
So what do you remember about life in South Sudan when you were growing up? What was school like? What were your villages like?
Well, in Southern Sudan, really, it was a very hard time for us because most of the students take classes under the tree. There's no permanent building. There's no hospital. There's no dispensary. People just, like when you're sick, you have to get local help, which is not very good for the people. And mostly, young people die because of diseases and so many other, because there's no hospital, no clinic, no anything. And in the school, people are struggling. You learn through hard way, because material, getting book is a problem. People don't have money to get book. They don't have money to pay school fees. All these people are struggling to get school, but it's still very hard for them to get through.
Yeah. So did you go to school under the community tree?
Yes, I did. That was when I was in primary one.
When so, I picture that, I picture kind of a joyful dancing and singing and lessons with sticks in the dirt. Is that what it was like for you?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Because we normally try to do the best we could. And most, especially in the Sholi communities, what we do is before even the introduction of English and school, people learn through music. They sing, young elders sing, then the singing will continue for several years. And the young people growing up will start learning from the singing that they sung. Those songs has very vital information. The meaning are very great. So that's how we learn things.
You learn your lessons through song. I think we would be smart to adapt some of that into our schools.
Yeah,
children very, very do good. Love song and movement.
That's true.
Oh, that's a beautiful way to teach.
Yeah.
Can you help our listeners understand the difference between being Sudanese or South Sudanese and being a Choli, which is how I know that you identify, correct?
Yes. Actually, the Choli communities are very, very, very minority group in Southern Sudan. We are very, very few. However, we are both Choli in Southern Sudan and some Choli in Northern Uganda. So we speak both the same languages. So,
is a Choli a language or a cultural identification?
A Choli is cultural identification, and it's also language spoken.
It's also a language. Yeah,
yeah, it's spoken by some of by Choli communities. So, life in Southern Sudan as a Choli is not very bad, because we also there are a lot of people actually who involved in the government. And working with the government, trying to get the better access to the road, get better access to education, and so many other things they're trying to do.
Build that infrastructure, build that infrastructure, roads and education.
Yeah, yeah, but it's very hard. They take it easy, with be patient, and things will come on.
Now, many Americans recognize Sudan when they think of the Lost Boys of Sudan. Were the Lost Boys a Choli?
No, that's why I say Southern Sudan is very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Southern Sudan, most people think only two tribes in Southern Sudan. Because the only thing you will hear either Dinka or Nuer. But in Southern Sudan, there's a lot of languages and a lot of tribes, probably about 60 different languages that they spoke. And most majority that they're in Southern Sudan are the Nuer and the Dinka. The Dinka are the largest, then followed by Nuer, then followed by Ajande. Then other small minorities classes there, cultures a lot. The Lost Boy are particulars. They are Dingas and Nuer.
Dingas.
Yeah, but there are others also other tribe also join them there within. Yeah.
Thank you for that. It's confusing to learn. You think you know. Oh, I know that he's from South Sudan, and then you're like, wait, he says he's a Choli. And it's helpful for us to sort that out a little bit. What caused you to leave your home country, and when did you arrive here in Maine?
Yeah, because this is a very good question. What caused me to leave my country? I think because of this war. Because I remember when I was still very young, it's around 5 years old, and that's when we had this war coming in our area. And people were prepared for fighting. But for us, we are very young. And we have to run to the bush and sleep inside in the bush with women. All men have to stay home because they have to protect the home. So I ran with my grandpa, ma, and my grandpa. So we left Southern Sudan in 1989. So we came to Uganda when I was still very young.
You moved to Uganda after you hid out in the bush and then
we hid in the bush. Then we left from the bush to Uganda. We didn't go back to the country.
And in Uganda, there were other Acholi people.
Yeah, there were other
Acholi
people who speak Acholi language. Then we have to come to Uganda, then get to refugees camp. where there's a lot of people, all different kind of Sudanese were there.
Were you raised in a refugee camp?
Yes.
In Uganda?
In Uganda.
Oh, I didn't realize
most
that.
Of my time I spent in Uganda.
Tell us what a refugee camp looks like.
Oh, being a refugee camp is not a good place to stay. So it's really a mess up. A lot of things is not very good. The toilet is not there. Food, scarcity of food, water problem, and so many of these and diseases. So many people die because of diseases. Even though the UN have to help in other part, providing food and some other resources that needed to the people, but still, it's not a good place to live in a refugee camp.
Sounds really stressful.
Yeah, very
with
stressful.
Death around the corner.
Right.
So often.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that sometimes the children ended up getting more education in the camps than they had in their communities because they'd been under the stress of war. Did you go to school in the refugee camp?
Yeah, as I stated before, I started my primary school from Sudan. Then when we came in Uganda, I went back again to primary one again. So that was under a tree too. Even in the refugees camp, there's no permanent building. So we are there under the tree. And I finished my primary and I joined high school in Uganda. So we went to the from refugees camp to the town in high school, because within the refugee settlement where we are, there's not any high school there.
So how did you get out of the camp and into the town?
Actually, it depends how you work out on the education, because there's a lot of competition. If you work out, you do a better good result, then you're going to get a scholarship.
I see.
So, and there's a lot of people that fighting for that scholarship.
That was you. You were a really good student.
So I was among those who got the scholarship.
Oh, well, congratulations to you. It changes your family's life, doesn't it? For you being such a good student.
Yes, that was great. Yeah, it changed a lot of life.
And you've been a student ever since, I think.
Yes, ever since 2006.
Wow. So just we'll take a moment here and say you are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with John Abore, originally from South Sudan, then Uganda, and now Portland, Maine. So can you tell us about your education that continued on? You said you did first grade twice, starting in South Sudan, then in Uganda, and you won a scholarship to high school in Uganda.
Yes.
Then what happened from there?
Actually, when I got my scholarship, I joined Kigumba High. Mm-hmm. When I joined Kigumba High in Uganda, so I completed my high school and get my diploma for high school from Uganda. Then I went ahead for 2 years college, which I was supposed to complete in 2001. But because my aunt was in the United States, so she was trying to arrange for us to come here, me, my grandpa, and my brother. So by 2001, we had a process started. So I dropped out from the school, because there's no money now to pay it up.
Oh, you had to spend the money on the legal process to integrate.
Yeah. So we finished our process by JBA in 2004, in January. Then in April 2004, they let us to leave Uganda and come to the United States. So that's when I reached here in 2004.
Wonderful. You were studying mathematics, is that correct?
Yeah, I was doing mathematics, yeah.
Yeah.
I was doing, they call it MEG, Mathematics, Economy, and Geography.
Oh.
So that's what I was studying.
Mathematics, Economy, and Geography.
Yes.
That's an interesting pairing.
It was a very, very, very good topic that I like.
Oh, that's great. And then you continued on, finished his undergraduate studies here, and then now is in a master's degree program for public health. And
yep.
Hopes to go on to get his PhD in public health and perhaps even return to South Sudan to help build a better infrastructure in the public health system there.
Yes.
What an asset you would be to your home.
Yeah, I'm trying the best I could. Since I came here, I completed my bachelor's degree. from Virginia College, and I started my PhD. I mean, my master's degree. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost there. I think probably by next year I will be finishing. That will give me new hope for the new future. The reason why I wanted to finish this because last year I went back to Sudan and I moved to several places. I went to Juba Town and I went to the main medical center in Juba Town. The situation is horrible.
What did the hospital look like in Juba?
Really, there's nothing here I could compare with it. When you look at it, you can even cry. A lot of people in the bed. You know, like small room which can only could be for one patient. Find about 5-6 people in the room, which is really not a safe place for them to be there. And at the same time, no medication. No.
There must be such pain that they're
right,
suffering.
Right, people are suffering a lot.
Are they crying out?
They are crying,
pain?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the situation, the sanitation itself is not very, very good.
I know in
like
some countries.
Smell, like,
oh, the smell.
Yeah,
I'm
smell
sure.
is really. Like it's not a hospital. You feel like you're in, I don't know how to describe it.
I know in some countries you need to bring your own bed linens and your own food to people in hospital. Is that true there?
Yeah, it's true. Mostly you have to go with your bed and other stuff because there's no bed.
No bed.
No bed.
Right on the floor?
Right on the floor.
Wow. So the germs must be
germs,
unbelievable.
Yeah. And in some places like in Magui County where I went also in the hospital to see how the situation is in the hospital. Like the drip, you can put a drip on a tree.
Oh.
And then you put it on the people. So it's not really very
sanitary.
Very sanitary. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's not.
My
yeah.
goodness, it must fuel your education when you realize you need to learn these things so you can take them back.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
set up a better, healthier system for your people.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying. Again.
I'm sure they're very proud of you.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're very, very, very.
They were smart to put their scholarship money on you, I think.
Yeah.
So here you are in Portland, Maine, and you're working at the Multicultural Multilingual Center, which is part of the Portland Public Schools. Many people understand, but some do not, that the Portland Public Schools are a quarter immigrants and refugees, and many of those not language, not English as a first language, so they're English language learners.
Mm-hmm.
And John works as a translator
yes.
and a cultural broker. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so can you tell us about some of the things, some of the brokerage deals you have? Who are you working with? What are they needing?
Actually, we had a lot of things that I would like to talk today. And I will talk for you about Ankoko and marijuana uses too. And before I could go in there, my job as a broker has a lot of things to do with families who don't speak English, especially in Portland High School. We do a lot of translation of papers from districts that could be sent home to the families. And in those papers, there are some languages that our people don't understand. Now, when we talk about special education, mostly our people who came from different countries don't know. They may say, what is special education? Maybe something very special.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
they want
their
kid to have that
yeah.
special education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when you say, my child is disabled, or my child is disability, or have learning disabilities, they might not understand that. So the only thing, the disabled only thing that they know that if I'm physically disabled.
Disabled. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could know that. But if you say I'm mentally, or I have slow learning, most of the immigrant country, people who came in this country, they don't call it like that. So make it up for them to understand it. So as a cultural broker, you have to go deep.
Yes, not just explain the words.
Explaining the word. What does
the
word is meaning? Yeah, all those ideas, you know. So until they come to understand it, then they will agree on what the school wanted them to do.
Sure,
so
that's
hugely
helpful.
It's not an easy word. It's, yeah.
I think of the mothers who send their children to school to learn things in languages they don't even know. And who knows what you're going to teach my kid? That must be frightening.
Right. That's right.
So you have parent what do you call it, parent advocacy community? PAC.
PAC.
What is that?
This is Parent Academics Counseling.
Oh, Parent Advisory Council.
Advising
counseling,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's part of your job too, isn't it?
Yes, it's part of our job.
And you organize the parents together?
We do organize for parents together. Sometimes we talk about, we talk to our parent about the law of school. What are the laws needed for the children to work in the school? So we explain all the laws regarding parent to our parents so that they should know in case of their child fall into problem, what are the laws regarding them? If their children have been caught maybe smoking marijuana and other things, parents don't know. Maybe the child is being dismissed from the school because of other reasons. So all this code of conduct, we have to explain to them and tell them what are those conduct.
That would be so different.
Yeah,
from
it's
where
very,
you're
very,
from.
Yeah.
Yes, and then it would be easy for the child to forget to mention that to their parents that they'd been thrown out of
right.
school.
Right, yeah, they don't. Mostly, most of the children who speak English here, and when they come home, they don't even share those ideas with their parents. Because they know when they tell their parent will act badly on them.
Right. I know how to not get in trouble. Don't tell my parent I got in trouble.
Yeah. So those are the things we are dealing with. And so many other things.
Wow. So what makes a parent successful in the Portland Public Schools with their family?
There's a lot of things that make parents successful. One, you have to pay attention to your child record. Two, you have to work with teachers together to make sure that that child has a successful life. In most cases, most of our parents who came from different countries, they are relaxed. And, but when they come into this country, they know, because in their countries, probably could be, when you send your child to school, the teacher has to deal with it. The teacher has to train your child, whatever they wanted to do, so that child could get knowledge from the teachers. But in this country, it's totally different. So when you come to this country, mostly both parents, teachers have to work together in order to raise their children to become perfect in school.
And so that's part of your job, is helping the parents understand you need to pay attention to their record.
Right.
You need to talk to their teachers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. And that's why our work, we have to talk to the parent, make sure our parent understand their kid, make sure our parent pay attention to what their kid do.
And your parents are working hard, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're doing difficult jobs on third shift a lot of times.
Yes. Most of our parents work very hard. Especially some of them work third shift, second shift. And they might not have that time to come and see the children even in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Even for parent conference, teacher conference, they might not have that time. But for us as parent PCA, we have to work very hard because we have to make sure that we convince them. This is very important for you. Okay, you can even ask from the work so that your children should know that you're attending their school or their conference. You know how they're doing in school. It will make your child to be happy. So
it helps so that the child doesn't feel stuck in the middle when the parents are in touch with the schools.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let them go ahead and be kids.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So what are some of your hopes and dreams for the families that you work with? Are they hoping to go back to South Sudan, or are many of them planning to stay? How does that look these days?
Most of the parents that we work with them, some of them who went to school from here and completed their education, feel they should go back and try to take what they got from here, the experience, back home. But the situation is, whether you go there or get a job or not, or some families who have children here, they have that complete loyalty. Whether to go home, leave your children here, so we will support them here. So those are conflicting things among parents.
It gets complicated, doesn't it?
Yeah, it gets complicated. And very few, I think, will be going back. Most of them might stay here. So long as they don't have the
possibility. Infrastructure. Yes, it would be scary to go back there, take your education, and not be able to get a job and not be able to support your family there.
Yeah, yeah.
I can I can imagine that gets very complicated. You get relationships going here, and it's difficult to pull away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish good things for South Sudan.
We hope so.
It's an exciting time for a country to be building itself from the ground up, really.
Yes.
And probably with a lot of broken, sorrowful hearts after 20 years of war.
Yeah.
Well, many blessings to South Sudan.
Yeah.
And the people of South Sudan.
That's true.
You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and I want to give special thanks to my guest, John Abore, for joining me here today. I hope you have good luck here with your family and your children in the Portland Public Schools, and that you do go on and get your PhD in public health.
Thank you.
I think you could change the world, John.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainersspeak.com. Next week, my guest will be Pius Ali. You may have seen his name on signs all over town because he is a school board member in the Portland Public Schools. And I think I'm correct in saying he's the first non-native school board member. So he knows a lot about the different ethnic communities of Portland and is involved with the YMCA, and I think you will enjoy meeting him next week. Don't wanna tell me no better than it.